podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's John Gibbons hosting the Weekender this week. And it's a slightly different Weekender because obviously it's a slightly different week for Liverpool in that we're not playing at the moment. In fact, there's no Liverpool game for 20 days. 20 days, how will we all cope? Well, how the Anfield Wrap are going to cope is to look ahead a little bit and use this little break to sort of analyse where we are. And of course, where we want to get to, because it does look like it's going to be a brilliant season for Liverpool in the Premier League, at least there. But we all want to get back to where we think we belong next season. So we're going to do a series of shows around there, exploring sort of how and why we can do that. And the first ones I did yesterday, I did a series called The Recovery yesterday, which was looking at teams, including Liverpool, but not just Liverpool, some of our rivals as well, who reached the summit and then had poor seasons following up and then got back to the top. And so how they've done it and how they did it was in lots of different ways is what I discovered. And so there's no sort of one size fits all solution, unfortunately, no magic bullet, if you like, but there are clues into what Jurgen Klopp and his team could do to get Liverpool back to the top next year. And so that was really enjoyable, and it all came out yesterday. Other things going on, Gareth Roberts spoke to a sports psychologist about the lasting after effects, really, of some of our big injuries, particularly to the centre half. So how will they come back, when will they come back, and what should we be expecting from them when they do return for Liverpool? So that sounds really good. Also, Neil Atkinson has done something with Rory Smith, something very big picture on club finances and what the current situation means to what football clubs are going to be able to do and how they're going to need to be creative in terms of trying to push forward with what they have to work with. So lots of things like that we have happening over the next few days. And so for the weekend, we wanted to do something which would normally be a subscribers show, but we wanted to put it out for free just to give a bit of the demonstration to you, those of you who don't subscribe, just in terms of, you know, the kind of thing that we are putting out. And so this is a bit of a lone watch. So it's speaking to, first of all, free supporters and writers who are watching some of our players who are out on loan every week, some of the big hitters who are out there who might come back and have a promising Liverpool career yet, and just to see how they're doing and just to get the analysis on their level of performance and whether they think future Liverpool careers are there. So these free calls are all coming up, and also then we will be with a group of Anfield Wrap contributors just to get their input and their kind of feelings on those three players that we've analysed there, which is Minamino, Grealish and Harvey Elliott, and whether they think they've got Liverpool careers. And also we have a loanee, which is Kabak, so a little bit of analysis on him and whether we think he's likely to sign for Liverpool. So all that's coming up. There's a little bit of a Harry's insert from me and Neil first, and then you're going to get all that. But we think it's a fantastic time to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. As we say, we've got loads of exciting stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks, football or not. Sometimes it allows us to get a bit more creative, to be honest with you. We enjoy it. So do subscribe to the Anfield Wrap if you don't. Loads of great audio and video over the next couple of weeks. But without further ado, me and Neil talking about razors for a little bit, and then you're going to get some great callers saying wonderful things about Liverpool footballers.
It's Neil and John for Harry's in the studio together, John. And you're looking relatively clean shaven, which is good to see given everything we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I've had a little go. Maybe I knew subconsciously that I would be talking about my wonderful Harry's razors today, so I wanted it fresh in my mind, and here we are.
Here we are indeed. Jeff and Andy, as ever, two ordinary guys, they were fed up with the overpriced razors, and they started Harry's to fix shaving. Do you think we started the Anfield Wrap to fix football commentary and conversation for Liverpool?
Probably not. I think we just thought it'd be a laugh.
Yeah,
I don't think to Jeff and Andy for having grander ambitions than us.
To fixing things. They knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. They take less profit. Harry's offers great quality products for a very, very fair price, and their amazing quality blades are almost half the price of the leading five blade brand. They're also giving 1% of the global sales to non-profit organisations that provide mental health care to men in need. They've been supporting us for ages, haven't they, Harry's, John? And people can go to harrys.com/Anfield, and within there as well they also get the shower gel. But they have been supporting us for ages, and it's good to have been part of their growth, albeit a very, very small part. We're not trying to take the credit.
No, yeah, they're massive now, aren't they? But that just shows that they're good, and you know what I mean? Like, people like the products, we like the products, and people are talking about them and recommending them. So yeah, I would encourage people to get involved. It's $3.95 for the trial set. You can cancel any time, but you know, I've stuck with it, you've stuck with it, and yeah, it is really good. Really good shave. That rich lathering gel, can't speak highly enough of it.
No, that is indeed the high point. The rich lathering gel is indeed the high point. There is all the other bits and pieces as well. There's the ergonomic handle. It's a five blade razor cartridge.
How many do you think they'll end up on? Where do you think they'll draw the line on the blades?
I think five surely should be.
I'd have said that on four, though.
Yeah, I know. There's people who do try to go to a higher number, but I just sort of wonder, you know, how pernicious is some people's stubble?
It
makes no sense to me.
Like Niles when they're on eight, we'll be like, oh, I'm a free blade.
Like the price of a pint. Like, you know, and I went, no one will stand for it breaking four. And then suddenly, and suddenly, you know, you're looking at £5.50 in some places. I mean, you pay more than that right now, obviously, for obvious reasons. But you need to look sharp coming out of lockdown. Yes. You need to look sharp. So harrys.com/Anfield to claim your trial set. Just £3.95. You are supporting us by doing so. But more than that, you're probably supporting and looking after yourself. Thank you very much, and let's get back on with the show.
And I am now with Adam Catchwell, who's our Harvey Elliott correspondent, turning into Adam. I mean, amongst other much greater achievements in your life, at these stress, but we do appreciate it, mate. And I know you're loving watching him this year, so I know you don't mind at all.
No, mate, I've enjoyed it. I actually want to take more low knees from you guys so I can appear on the Anfield Rap a little bit more often. So, yeah, hopefully that happens.
He's doing great, though, isn't he? He's doing really well.
Yeah, he is, man. And fans that obviously are listening to this that are just dipping in and out and keeping up to date with what Harvey's doing, you'll see the numbers that he's churning out. And the game seems to revolve around numbers these days, doesn't it? You know what I mean? You speak to all the pundits, like, going, what's his stats like? What's this like? And they're not lying. When that kid has the ball at his feet, I said it on the last time I was on the show with you, when the lad's got the ball at his feet, he is superb. He's our most creative element. There's no doubt about that. And he's 17 years of age. We've got to keep reminding ourselves that he's 17, you know. Yeah. He's playing man's football. And that's no disrespect to any 17-year-olds. He's playing proper man's football where you get booted every now and again in the Championship. And the football's very different to what it is in the Premier League. And he's doing extremely well when the ball's at his feet. Recently, he has been dropped a couple of times. And there's a few reasons for that. Firstly, we've been crap. I think we've won. I think we've won 1 in 11. We went on a horrific losing streak, and therefore, when you've got creative players like Harvey, you kind of need to bolster it up with more harder hitting lads in the midfield in order to stop the other lads doing something. So, I think that's been part of the reason as to why he's been left out. He's 17, and he's been playing 90 minutes after 90 minutes after 90 minutes. You can't. You know what I mean? You've been good enough to lend him us. We don't want to burn the lad out for you. So I think that's part of it as well. And also, as I said, when the ball's at his feet, he's absolutely unbelievable. There's other aspects of the game that maybe he just needs to develop when we don't have the ball and just being aware of where he needs to be on the pitch. But listen, man, he's a talent. He's brilliant to watch.
I mean, it's great news. So people might have maybe seen that he has dropped out the team. So it's really good to get your sort of context around all that, really, around sort of, you know, the situation of the club and how, as you say, sometimes it's just sort of a necessity in terms of how you want to play. How have you sensed his sort of attitude to being sort of put back on the bench? Because a few sort of, you know, players of his sort of hype wouldn't necessarily like it. Has he seemed to have just sort of got on with it?
You see, listen, I've never met him and I've never interviewed him, which you kind of get obviously more of a feel for that person's mentality. But when you see him interviewed, very mature for a 17-year-old lad, the way that he speaks about the football game. And obviously we played last night. Yeah, boring 0-0, I know. But we played last night and he was back in the starting 11. And by all accounts, I watched 60 minutes of it because I was watching a lot of Champions League last night. But he was there, he was creating, he was trying, and he was doing his thing. So therefore, nothing's fallen off from his game. So he's obviously bounced back from the disappointment of being dropped out. When you're a high profile, like coming from a high profile team like that, and you do get dropped, there's an element of embarrassment, especially at 17. You know what I mean? There'll be people expecting him to be the main man coming from Liverpool, but that's not the case. He's come to Blackburn Rovers to learn, to develop. You know, as I keep banging on about his age, he's still a young lad. He's still learning the game, and you're definitely going to learn it in the Championship because there's no hiding place. And he stepped up. But like I said a moment or two ago, the consequences of the team in general not being that good, like I said, 1 win in 11 in the Championship ain't that good. There's going to be consequences for certain lads coming in and coming out. I think I feel for him a little bit because now, I mean, people might have seen that Bradley Dax got injured again. So therefore, there's going to be even more onus on him. And that's unfair, you know. I think when he's in the team with Bradley and various other creative players, he can do his thing and he can do his thing at his own pace. Whereas now, every fan, I know what fans are like, they're going to go, well, Dacky's not here. Who's our next creative guy? Well, it's Harvey Elliott. He's got to do it. He's got to step up. So therefore, there's more pressure now going to be hyped on him by the end of the season. He's capable of stepping up. I just hope that the team supports him whilst he's doing that.
Yeah, it's... it's a very good point on the terms of the pressure, you know, that we can sort of put on these young lads when we see them do it once and we've done it at Liverpool. You know, a kid does something great and then you're suddenly like, well, why isn't he doing it every week? Which can happen, and it happens sort of, you know, at any level of football, really. But I think he does seem to be someone who is quite happy having that little bit of pressure on him. And you talked about him being your sort of main creative force. And he looks to me like he's like, yeah, bring it on.
Mate, he is. To be a top player, you need to be a bit arrogant, don't you? You need to have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. You need to think that you're the nuts. And he's got that. Like I said, when this lad's got the ball at his feet, you're on the edge of your seat. You're thinking to yourself, he's going to do something in a minute. Because, as I say, you're the guys and girls that listen to you, they'll see their numbers. And they're not lying. You know what I mean? I think he's got 10 assists, 5 goals this season. And those numbers might not sound amazing. But when you compare that to, first of all, every other under 23 in the division, he's miles ahead of everybody else. And I think there's only Buendia, who everybody's heard of in this division, who's ahead of him. You know, that's it. That's mad, you know, for a lad of his age, in his first what you would class as proper full season as a loanee, coming away from the comforts and the beauty of the Champions League winners and the Premier League winners, you know what I mean? Coming away from that to play proper dog rough football, he's doing extremely well. He's got it. It's just going to take a little bit of time for him to develop the man strength. And listen, you know that I cover a lot of boxing. We would class this as ring IQ, right? It's game IQ. It's understanding where he needs to be at certain times of the football match. He's not playing on the park anymore with his pals. The other side of the game, once he's got that, he's going to be a player, man. I'd be gobsmacked. Like I say, he's a teenager. By the time he's out of his teenage years, he will be a Liverpool footballer. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
No, that's fantastic to hear. Do you guys sort of talk amongst yourselves about where he fits in with, you know, other good players that you've had, other talents you've had over the last 20 years? Because, I mean, we need to obviously remember that you guys, you know, Premier League...
We were all right once. We were all right.
But even after that, you know, well in the 2000s, you know, Blackburn had a very competitive side. Do you guys talk about all the young players you've had and where he sort of fits in?
Yeah, well, the two, or maybe even three main ones that we had post-Shearer were David Dunn, Damien Duff, and Matt Janssen for a period of time. I mean, the first two were most certainly products of the Blackburn Rovers Academy and coming through as teenagers, whereas Yanni came a little bit later on. And they were the young, exciting talents that we've had. And the one that you were probably comparing to is a mix between Damien Duff and David Dunn, because football's developed so much over the years and people are asked to do so many different roles, aren't they? You've got to be fluid. To get yourself into a top Premier League side, you've got to be able to do all the different roles.
Yeah.
I don't want to go off on Man City for a minute, but if you look at Phil Foden, for example, he can do many different roles across the front line and across the middle line as well. Harvey's got that. He's got elements of that because he's been asked to play in that right-hand side of an attack three coming in on his left foot. And we've seen him score goals, and that's where he's got his goals from this season. He's also been asked to play in like a number 10 role, and he's also been asked to play further back in the pitch as well when, you know, our backs were up against the walls. He struggled with that, the more defensive side of it, but when he's going forward with the ball, he's been absolutely, absolutely bang on. Talent-wise, listen, we had Dunny for a long period of time, so therefore we saw him come through the ranks and develop and get himself to the stage of where he was in England football, and he was also doing that at Premier League level. So it's hard for us to judge this version of Harvey Elliott against that version of David Dunn, but I'd be absolutely gobsmacked if by the time this lad's 23, 24, 25 years of age, he's not a full international and he's helping you compete for Premier League and Champions League football.
That'd be brilliant. All really excited. Do you think there's any chances there next year when you guys are all back in the stadium? Do you think there's any chance you were watching Harvey Elliott?
Well, this is it as well, you know. All my assessments are off just watching the telly because I've not been allowed into the stadium. You get a far better assessment of a footballer, don't you, when you're in there and you can see them, what they're doing when the ball's miles away, you know what I mean? Where are they at? And I was really looking forward to that. And hopefully, I know that maybe your lot might say, well, hang on a minute, you know, he might come back to us. Or you might even want to loan him out to a higher level. I'm not saying Premier League, but you see guys going out to Germany now, don't you? And other places to get, I don't know, Europa League football or Champions League football, just to get that experience. I won't blame Liverpool for wanting to do that, because he's most certainly a talent and he probably needs that for his own development to move forward. But from a purely selfish point of view, I'd absolutely love it if he came back to Blackburn for yet another season. He seems to have a good camaraderie with all the lads there. He's getting on with everybody extremely well, it seems. And I think he, because of the arrogance and because of the little bit of a chip on his shoulder, I want to see him in front of a crowd. I want to see the crowd giving it him, you know what I mean, and spurring him on and seeing if he can really dominate and run a football match. We see it in little clips, like 10, 20 minutes. It's like, he's absolutely walking this. You want to see him 45 minutes, 60 minutes, right, give me ball, I'll sort the rest of it out. And I think he'll benefit from, you know, I was going to say 30,000 people then, but I'll go with 15 at Ewood Park. I'll go with 15 at Ewood.
Tom, man, we shall see. But Adam, really appreciate that and love to hear your enthusiasm, and it's got us all enthusiastic too. Adam mentioned this love of boxing. I would give a shout out to Fight Disciples for any boxing fans listening. It's an excellent award-winning podcast. The boys are great fun and they love what they do. So do check that out if you're a boxing man. But in the meantime, nice one to Adam. And we'll move on now, and we're going to Portugal. And now to Jamie Farr, who's been our Portuguese football correspondent for as long as Liverpool have been getting Porto in the Champions League, which feels like quite a run now. But also, he's come in very handy recently, obviously, because Marco Grujic has found himself at Porto and found himself in a Champions League winning team to start, Jamie. What an achievement, first of all, by Porto that was, to get through against Juventus.
Yeah, it was incredible. I think... I think that really caught a lot of people's eye, because the second leg in particular was a sensational game. I think a lot of people watched that one, and I think there's a lot of bad blood out there for Juventus as well, actually. So there seemed to be a lot of people who enjoyed that one quite a bit, myself included, and nice to sort of to see their sort of reputation enhancing as well, because I think those sorts of teams sometimes get a bit forgotten about. So it was fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic for them, and we'll see what happens in the draw, obviously, tomorrow. Marco Grujic then was used in that game as an impact sub and used to pretty effective ways, I would say. Is that sort of how he has been used throughout the season? And if so, is that one of his more eye-catching performances, or have you seen sort of, you know, lots of sort of similar things as we've gone?
Yeah, I think that's basically it, really. He's had to essentially settle for that kind of role. His situation is unfortunate in the sense that Porto basically only really seem to be playing 4-4-2 at the moment with two players in the middle who have been pretty much unmovable in that first 11, in particular Sergio Oliveira, who I think, you know, who was the one that really shone in that Juve game in particular. You know, he scored both those goals in that match, and that was sort of an indication of what Grujic has been up against, really. And so I think he's found it tough in that sense. But he's as you say, and as we saw in that Juve game, he did a job when he came on, and he's looked a reasonable fit when he's got those opportunities. They've just been pretty far few and far between.
Yeah, Liverpool fans enjoyed his play acting, shall we say.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was picked up on in Portugal or whether, I don't know, maybe I don't know, they're not as fond as that sort of thing, or maybe a bit more used to that sort of thing, I don't know. But certainly Liverpool fans enjoyed a bit of a shithousery, shall we say.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think when he was face down like that, a lot of us thought, is he going to do the little the Busquets peek? And and he did it to much amusement. And you're right. I think a bit more par for the course potentially in Portugal or continental Europe in general. But he's actually, in his relatively few appearances, shown he is quite expressive as well. Actually, he did quite a sort of meme worthy, if you like, reaction to a red card early in the season with Porto against Marseille, where he looked and sort of did this sort of cartoonish reaction. So he seemed a bit of a character, but he did did exactly what he was asked to do when he came on and played a pretty reasonable role in all of that.
What do you think his strengths are then as a player? Because you'll have seen him a bit more than us sort of recently. I'm particularly interested in... I was interested when he went to Porto because I thought it was a big move, but also I liked the fact that he was going to a team who played towards obviously the top of the league. They've always sort of competed at the top, and listen, Liverpool have dropped off a little bit recently, but it doesn't affect how teams play against us. I promise you that, which is 11 behind the ball, which is break, you know, get through us if you can, and often sort of hanging on dear life. I presume that Porto were coming up against that a lot over in their national league as well. So how is Grujic an asset against that sort of defence?
I think he's a good player for, you know, really keeping the ball moving. He's always, you know, a player who's always got his head up, and you know, he can be kind of trusted to sit in and keep everything going in the midfield. And you know, he's quite a big guy as well, so he has not scored yet, but he is a threat from set pieces, in which Porto are a team that are strong in that area too. So whilst he's not been a regular part of that team in that sense just yet, he's definitely suited, and you can see why manager Conceição likes him and wanted to bring him in the first place. So, as I said before, he's largely been back up to the two more regular midfielders, Oliveira and Matheus Uribe. But whenever he has, you know, slotted in quite seamlessly when he's been given the chance, and I think he's been a bit unlucky at times as well. So, I think he's been a good asset for Porto, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, if they've got any lot more, you know, longer term plans for him.
Well, let's talk about that then. I was going to come on to that, so why not now? You know, you'd imagine Liverpool would want a decent chunk of change to get him. Porto have traditionally, what seems to me, been quite smart in the transfer market. It's one of the ways that they sort of operate, you know, getting players in, you know, a good value, and then selling them on, you know, to I guess richer clubs, often in England, for decent prices. Grujic, you know, Liverpool would want a decent fee for him, you would have thought. I'm sure there's negotiations to be had in post-COVID times, or just COVID times, if we're honest. But it'd still be, I would imagine, you know, a large percentage of Porto's transfer budget in a summer. And do you think it is likely that they would we'd look to spend it on someone like him?
Yeah, it's as you say, you're quite right. It's tricky that... even a club as big as Porto are globally, yeah, the you know, will be constricted by not only what's going on at the moment, but they've been struggling financially for a few years now, and have had to battle financial fair play and this kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, my gut instinct suggests that it would be perhaps more likely they would maybe look internally to some of their sort of youth options, or, you know, or go back into the loan market again, as we've seen in, you know, as you've seen in the more recent seasons. I think Liverpool have been, one of their strengths has been getting good prices for such players in that situation. So that's the sort of tendency, I guess, which could potentially you know, sort of count Porto out of that particular market. But it'd be interesting to see what sort of fee that they would demand for him, because, you know, like I say, I think he's a player the manager likes, and I don't necessarily think they would just, you know, they're thinking, you know, once we hit sort of May or June, it's goodbye sort of thing. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion by any stretch. So it'd be interesting to see what happens, because purely as a player, I think Conceição will be interested, and there's always going to be a strong chance that one or two of those players I mentioned, in particular Oliveira, might go.
Yeah,
and Oliveira is someone who recently signed a new deal, so he's someone they can demand a lot more money for if someone someone comes in for him. And I think there'll be, like I say, after that Juve game, I think there'll be certainly a few more people in the queue for him. So it's possible. But yeah, as you say, the sort of logistics of it potentially might mean it's more on the unlikely side.
Well, we shall see. We'll follow it with interest, and also obviously follow Porto with interest there with Marco Grujic as they come through the Champions League. And who knows, Liverpool might get Porto again, and then poor old Jamie will have to do the Anfield map again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But we shall see. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Jamie. You can find him on Twitter. He's at FRFootballJamie. He also writes for Football Radar, amongst lots of other places as well. So do check out his work. But yeah, thanks a lot to Jamie. And now we're going to the South Coast to check on Minamino. And yes, I am with Nick Hillingsworth, who has obviously been keeping us up to date with goings on at Southampton for a number of seasons now, but is come with us today to speak more specifically about Taki Minamino, who seems to be going okay. Nick, obviously, you know, he's in a struggling team at the moment, which isn't always easy for someone to come into, but he seems to have settled pretty well and has certainly scored a couple of eye-catching goals.
Yeah, no, we're pleased with him. He's a Southampton type player. He's very uses the ball well, nips around well. I think we've struggled at times to find out where to play him. Do we play him wide or do we play him up front? He's suffered a little bit that we've had injury problems and we've had to fit him in where he can play rather than perhaps where he would be best suited to. But there's no complaints about his performances. He's been a great loan signing, and I would say he is the best signing of the January transfer window, given his status and for all clubs in the Premier League, given you know the status of the player and what we've got for the month. So we're really happy with him.
Yeah, it was really interesting how it came about, wasn't it? Because it wasn't on the radar at all, and I think Southampton, you know, when Liverpool were talking about something else, weren't they? And then Minamino kind of came up in conversation, and the talk up in Liverpool is that they wouldn't have let him go anywhere else. But because of the style of football Southampton play, and because obviously the respect between the managers, there was a feeling that it would be a good fit. And so it's proven, as you say, he's fitted in very well in terms of, you know, what Southampton do, and seems to be enjoying himself too.
Yeah, no, he does. I mean, he seems to fit in. And, you know, I mean, you, of course, all the interviews you get on the official channels, he's always going to be saying, hey, it's great here. It's lovely. I've got the best dressing room, peg, everything. But he does seem to be fit, and he seems a good fit. I mean, what happens at the end of the season, I don't know. I mean, okay. The problem is for all clubs is virtually every football club's losing money hand over foot at the moment because of the current pandemic. So we'd like to see him back here, but will Liverpool want to keep him? And indeed, there's rumours that other clubs are interested. So we'll just use him while we can, which sadly won't be, I think, on Saturday when we play in the FA Cup.
Yeah. We'll be interested to see how he does next. But he does seem to be enjoying it there. To me, he seems a little bit lighter. And I don't mean that in terms of weight, because there was nothing on him anyway. But, you know, it felt like sometimes the shirt at Liverpool was a little sort of heavy for him. Whereas Southampton, he seems to be playing a bit freer to me, and a bit more kind of the player that we knew we were getting, because he tore us apart for Salzburg at Anfield, and was a confident lad that night. But we're seeing sort of more of that player, definitely. So I think he is genuine, kind of, when he says, you know, how much he is enjoying it, for sure. And as you say, what happens next? I'm interested in some comments from the manager made, where he talked about a bit of work he had to do maybe off the ball, and I wonder whether that's something maybe that's held him back a little bit at Liverpool. I don't know, but I don't know if you saw the comments from the Southampton manager where he said, yeah, what he's doing with the ball is great, but maybe could be doing a little bit more defensively, or to kind of, you know, just a bit more kind of off the ball in terms of, I don't know, his work rate. Have you spotted anything around that, really?
I think it's right. That goes back to my earlier comment that we've had to play him where we've got to fit him in, and I don't mean that in a negative way, because we've had injury problems, so it suited us to play him at times as a wide midfield player rather than in a more attacking mode. And I mean, certainly on Sunday against Brighton, he struggled. They got down the byline as a little bit, and he struggled a little bit. And I mean, but we got it wrong there. That wasn't the player not trying or not fitting in. We got it wrong. We played a guy who can play as a wing back or winger as such, as a forward in Nathan Teller. And we played Minamino more, as you say, as a wide man. And we got the tactics wrong. So that's probably what Ralph is talking about. It's, yeah, he did probably need to work a little bit on that, but that's his fault. And I mean, personally, I felt if we'd have switched those as players, we'd have probably you know, solved the problem. But hey, you know, if you know, Ralph Hasenhüttl, Jurgen Klopp, they're all paid lots of money, more than me, and they must know best.
Yeah, of course, of course. I'm interested in if there's any particular players that he's linked up well with, because as you say, Nick, you've had terrible injury record, and the side's been chopped and changed the results, and also sort of by the sounds of it, formations and things as well. But is there anyone in particular of your guys that he's got on the same wavelength as Quaise straight away?
He seems to be on the same way. I mean, you're right. There's been so many changes in the time he's played here. You know, he linked up well with Danny Ings, but then Danny Ings hasn't played much of late. He's linked up well with Shea Adams when he's come on. He just seems to be a nice little, again, more than an up and down wing back, a player that links in nicely, can use the ball well. And the one they obviously did link up well with was Nathan Redmond, where in our draw with Chelsea, when Redmond got the ball and then just laid it into his path, he made the run. And we want to see a little bit more of that. And I mean, in that game, he was used, yeah, a little bit more of an attacking free role. I think he's a great link-up player, it seems to me. He plays the football we try to play in, the Liverpool way or whatever, where it's pass and run, little triangles. And I think that's where he's got to, you know, he'll fit in. But he just seems very versatile. And as you say, it's you know, it's maybe the weight off his shoulders. You know, you go from being a small fish in a big pond to being a fairly big fish in a small pond. And, you know, you can go there with confidence and play, you know. So it's good. It's all good with, don't know whether to call him Tacky or Mini.
We go with Tacky, but I'm not sure that's his preference, to be honest with you. It's just something that we've ended up sort of doing. And just to sort of finish off then, Nick, you know, what you sort of sense is the most likely, you know, scenario? And I know it's difficult, and you've quite rightly pointed out this, you know, summer of, you know, uncertainty with all football clubs in terms of how much will they be have to spend and how much will they be willing to spend on footballers. But if you were to sort of try and look ahead, do you think it's most likely he'll come back to Liverpool or come to Southampton either on a longer loan or permanently? Or I know you've mentioned as well, there's a couple of potential suitors further afield as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the case, Stephen, I mean, Liverpool from looking at it and a little bit like, in a little bit of a transition, you know, we're not firing on all cylinders. So if I, you know, let's make no bones about it. You know, when I was a kid, we thought players played for the badge and loved to be there. Now they play for their wallet. Would I, if it was a choice between Liverpool and playing from a place at Liverpool or playing from a place at Southampton, I choose Liverpool and I'm a Saints supporter. You know, So I think more likely, and I mean, I'm not sure quite how long he's got left on his contract at Liverpool, but he's you know, he's in his mid-20s, so he's not a spring chicken as such. So I would see the ball is firmly in Liverpool's court. If Liverpool come to him and say, look, we're impressed with what you've done at Southampton, we're not that impressed with some of our fringe players who've slotted in our recent run, you come here and play for your place, I would expect him to play at Liverpool. If Jurgen comes in and says, look, it's not really working out here, we'll let you go. If I was him, I would think that we're probably a good fit. But there's, you know, nowadays these clubs are abroad. You can be the seventh biggest club in England and not get a sniff at the Champions League. And then we watch teams in Ireland, Wales and Scotland, they've barely 3,000 supporters playing in the Champions League. So, you know, a lesser European club can offer him, European football. And that's probably where we may lose out, unless we win the FA Cup this year, which we're still hopeful of.
I know you're still hopeful of that.
Then everything changes then.
We shall see, we shall see. Yeah. Well, I'll be cheering you on at the weekend, of course. But in the meantime, thanks a lot for Nick for joining us. And of course, all our callers who've come on and discussed in great detail how our lads are doing at various clubs. And now we'll be going to a bit of a panel of Anfield Rap contributors to talk about what we think is most likely to happen next. And it's the Last Fan Standing insert. And Last Fan Standing is an app that we're partnering with at the moment. And it's a quiz app you play on your phone. It's completely free to download and it's good fun. Not just because you've often got me and or Neil doing the quizzes, but also there's predictor games around the game where you can win some pretty cool prizes. So we're going to give a bit of a demonstration now of how the normal game works. And to join us, to help us with that, I've got one of our subscribers, Payment Half. There, Payment, welcome to the Anfield app.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Where am I speaking to you from anyway?
Central Florida, USA.
Oh, beautiful. I bet the weather's better than here.
Not today. A little bit rainy, a little bit muggy. But
you might as well be in Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? If you want muggy, mate, come here. Tell you what. Oh, dear. How have you found it, mate, anyway? You know, it's life's like strange for everyone at the moment. How are you getting on?
Pretty well. It's slowly trying to creep back towards normal with the vaccines getting out, but still not the same as it was. So looking forward to seeing fans in the stadiums.
Yeah. No, it's going to be massive. I mean, I got to the Spurs game just before Christmas and that was kind of huge for me. But obviously then it gets taken away again. It's pretty tough. But hopefully next year, you know, everyone will be back in. Hopefully we'll be able to sort of invite people back to our city. Have you been over to Liverpool?
No, I have not, but my brother has and loved it. And both of us are top red, so I would love to be there soon.
Well, you're free to come and join us for the beer in the office whenever you want. There is always alcohol available. I say like I'm always drinking, we're not, but there's definitely booze around. So they're more than welcome to come in and see us. But anyway, we'll get on with the quiz. So how it works, Last Fan Standing, is you keep going until you get one wrong. And if you go right to the end, you are the Last Fan Standing and you get the kudos and everything available around that. So I've got three quizzes here that they've used in the past and I'll let you choose which one. There's one on Kenny Dalglish, one on Ian Rush, and one on Jamie Carragher. So which one do you feel most comfortable with?
Wow. I'll go with Carragher.
Go with Carragher. Okay. We'll get going on Carragher. So question one is, Jamie Carragher played more times for Liverpool than Steven Gerrard. Is that true or false?
Well, good question. I would say true.
It is true. He's the second most appearance holder, Jamie Carragher, second most appearances for Liverpool, only behind Ian Callaghan, who has 7 million. No, it's not quite that. It's actually quite close, actually, pretty close to the four. Carragher on 737, Gerrard 710. But it doesn't matter because you were right. So we'll carry on. Question two, how many goals did Carragher score for Liverpool? Was it 5, 10 or 15?
I'm going to say 10.
It wasn't. It was 5. I think you were counting own goals. You counted on they scored that as well. But it was only 5. It maybe felt like more. But one seems to be the one that everyone gets. It seems to be one, and that second one seems to always catch people out. So never mind. Not going to trouble the leaderboard there, mate. But it was nice to speak to you. And how you feeling about the rest of the season? Then obviously we've got this Champions League run and quarterfinals. We'll see who we get drawn tomorrow. But are you feeling good about it?
Feeling good about it. Want to avoid a couple of teams in the Champions League. Would love to get Porto or Dortmund. And then 5 points behind Chelsea for fourth. It's doable. I think we can do it.
Positivity to finish from Payment there. Listen, mate, thanks a lot for coming on. Download the Last Fan Standing app, everyone. It's completely free. It's on Android and iPhone. And yeah, it's good fun. And me and Neil do the quizzes and we really like them as people and we're enjoying doing it. Thanks a lot to Payment and back to the show. And now I'm joined by our lovely panel. I've got Harriet Pryor, I've got Paul Cooper, I've got Mike Bencole to say what they think is most likely happened to our three lads who we've discussed who are out on loan. Obviously, there's a few more as well, but we focused on the big hitters, if you like. And then we're also going to have a little chat about Quebec at the end as well, because obviously Quebec is currently on loan at Liverpool. There is a price agreed should Liverpool choose to pay it. So I'm going to ask our panel whether they think that is likely to happen and how they think he's doing. But
I'll start with you, Harry. First of all, three players out on loan have had very sort of different Liverpool careers, different stages of their careers. Generally, Grealish has been here the longest, but has obviously not been around too much and has been here, there and everywhere. Minamino probably came in with the highest fanfare, but yet was shipped out on deadline day, which was a bit of a surprise. And obviously, Harvey Elliott, a young player, we've all expected big things of, you know, almost learning his craft. What do you think of the three of them being out on loan? Which ones do you think sort of make most sense for Liverpool? And which, if any of them, do you feel is just a little bit of shop window?
Yeah, I think Grealish is a bit of a weird situation, isn't it? Because we've barely seen him play in the first team since he joined. I remember when he joined back in, what's it, 2016 or whatever, and he had quite a good pre-season. I think I even put him in my fantasy team. I was thinking he was going to be exciting.
I mean, there's no higher accolades.
I know, exactly. And then he just left. And yeah, and then we never really saw him again. I think he's not really had that much of game time at Porto and has struggled with the counter-pressing and the speed of it all. So I don't think realistically we're going to see him back at Liverpool or succeeding back at Liverpool. So for me, he would be the one that I would say probably we're not going to see again and we maybe don't need to see again. I think Elliot is obviously really exciting because he's so young and it made sense for him to go out on loan. I think he should maybe do another season, maybe out in the Championship or on loan somewhere, just so he gets a bit more experience because he is still only 16 or 17. And I'm just conscious of bringing him in too young when we have still got obviously that front three and now we've got Jota as backup. So it's good to see him and good to see the clips on Twitter and Instagram of him scoring and assisting at Blackburn. So that's always good to see. And I do see him maybe in the future coming in as a backup to someone like Salah or you know, maybe when Shaqiri goes that he comes back. And then who else have we got? Missing someone. Minamino. Yeah, that was random, wasn't it? I don't think anyone expected him to go out on loan and then he did. But I think Klopp was just saying, you know, he needs to go out and enjoy football again and get some more minutes under his belt. So it makes sense. I would like to see him back next season, though. I don't want him to be gone too long because I think he made a nice change and he did have some good moments. It's just a bit of consistency that we weren't able to really offer him. So, yeah, I hope he comes back and I hope that his spell has given him a bit more confidence.
It's funny, Mike, with Harvey Elliott, because Harvey had said something very sensible there about his growth and about maybe looking at next season, you know, taking it a step up. And that's where I normally am, you know, think, well, he's going to Blackburn this year. Maybe a Premier League club lower end sort of next year will be good. And then I see like 5 seconds of him doing something boss against Blackburn. And I'm like, start him against Arsenal. Get him back started. Do you know what I mean? He's just like, he's that kind of player. You can't help but get excited.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. I have a mate who supports Blackburn and he jokes on causing the Cockney Mercy, so that's quite high praise, basically. And, like, to be fair, what Harvey Elliott's doing is remarkable. Like, he's basically the defining force for a Championship side at 17. And it's like a Championship side at mid-table that were at some point pushing for the playoffs, so he's doing something that's quite remarkable, to be honest with you. My big concern with him, though, and it'll be the thing that he needs to figure out and the club needs to figure out moving forward, is where does he play? Because I don't think he's a right winger. I don't think he'll be a right winger moving forward. And I think he might follow a similar trajectory to Curtis Jones, who was a wide forward / attacking midfielder when he was a lot younger. Then he obviously shifts into midfield and becomes a really good midfield player. And I think Elliot will do the same thing. But like, he has been so, so impressive for Blackburn. And my mate genuinely raves about him being like one of the best players they've had on loan there for years. On Minamino, I think Minamino is an interesting one because he's someone that probably needed another move before he signed for Liverpool. Like, you look at Mane, for example. Mane gets Southampton move from Salzburg, I think it is. Then he gets the Liverpool move. And I actually think we signed Minamino one move too early.
One Red Bull too early.
Like, he needed more time at, like, Southampton, which are our feeder club, obviously. Give him time there. And obviously then we would have signed him for Liverpool. I just think this loan might do him the world of good, but he probably needs another loan just to really get some Premier League football in his legs, because it was weird with him. Like, he played the Palace game, had a good game, and never played again. And I don't understand why that was the case, but I definitely think this loan will do him the world of good. I honestly would loan him again next season, personally, because I think he needs more games.
You're one of our bigger picture fellas. Copia specialise in it. The bigger picture does need sort of considering with all of this and with all sorts of ins and outs. And Harriet's there saying, you know, she doesn't feel like, you know, Grealish is ever sort of going to be a Liverpool player. And I understand that, because that's the sort of logical thing is, well, how often have we seen, you know, these lads go on continuous loans and then come back and do things for Liverpool? But it is all just a bit weird at the moment. Like, if he is to leave, someone needs to either pay us an amount of money that we decide is acceptable to us, and there wasn't much time last summer that we were sort of reducing, you know, our asking prices, you know, too far. Yeah, or they need to go out on loan again. They may just decide, and it's not just with Gooch, but it's talking about Gooch. Well, should we just see if we can get anything out of him? Because what is the sort of, you know, the point of all this? And sort of similar for Minamino, really. His Liverpool career, or his future Liverpool career, almost seems to me to stem on what other things happen, you know, in terms of ins and outs.
Yeah, and I think something Gruwich has got that the other two haven't got. I was saying this about Minamino going out because I think we were all a bit shocked by it. And as the others have said about Joe, his last game, I think Mike said his last game was the Palace game.
Yeah.
Brilliant, scored a goal. And then we don't really see him again. You're like, what's gone on? And the thing that Gruwich has got, I mean, this is very technical football analysis, John, so I hope everyone can follow, but he's absolutely massive. and the other two lads are dead little. And I genuinely reckon, like, people underestimate how important that is to a Jurgen Klopp team. Like, we've seen with some of the lads that have been missing that we're just a much smaller team. And there is a lot to be said for having some more big lads. I think even Klopp referenced it when there was a game when Minamino didn't come on or Origi came on instead or played instead. And one of the things he said was, well, we couldn't afford to take Origi out because we're really weak on set pieces without him. If you take him out of your defending corners, all of a sudden Joe Thiago's in there trying to man mark some 6'4" lad. And there's a lot to be said for that. Gruwich is a dead interesting one. On another point, I remember Carragher making a point a few months ago about there's certain lads when you play for a football club like Liverpool that you turn up for pre-season training and some lads turn up and like, oh my God, you still play for us? I thought we sold you years ago. And I reckon Gruwich is one of them. Like, I forget he plays for us and then you see bits about him and he's doing well. And I think the problem for all of them is just how much we've said this about lads in the past, how much we've moved on as a football club. Like, this might even apply to Minamino. I'm still massively on. I'm getting so carried away with the Mbappe thing. I'm starting to add Haaland to it. Like, we're gonna rock the whole world of football and buy both of them. And then, I mean, where does that leave Minamino and Harvey Elliott then, the poor fellas? But you're right. I think that, you know, I'm talking a lot here, but a huge part of all of this, and I think there were two key points to Minamino going. One is he's smaller, which sounds a bit mad. But two is someone would give us some dough for him. And basically giving him to Southampton for a few months helped to fund the centre-back deals. I think in the current climate, you can't underestimate how much of the activity around these footballers could be dictated by who will give us money for any of them.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, Harriet? Because, you know, it's different times, isn't it? And different sorts of financial times, really. And these would all sort of come into play, really. And it might be a summer where, you know, lots happen, but people are having to be, you know, creative. Like Paul's just said there, getting in a loan fee to sort of bring you out. Or it might be a case of, well, everyone sort of adjust so people sort of agree to sort of lower the prices or swap players around a little bit more just move money around that just sort of looks like it's busier than it is. But it could also be a summer where sort of not much happens really and people might have to start being a little bit more creative with what they've got or what they've loaned out.
Yeah, I think with Liverpool, everyone's got all these ideas. I see, you know, on Twitter, people writing like the five players that we could go out and how much we'd get for them. And then the one, you know, Mbappe or someone we could bring in. It's just not that realistic, is it? I think this season is going to be quite quiet. And I know as fans, it's frustrating when you want to see new players. And I think our team does now need a bit of a sort of uplift and a few fresh faces. But I'm not sure how much of that we're going to see this season. So I think it would be nice just to see some more players on loan. Hopefully Kabak might stick around a bit longer and, you know, he'll be a good backup when we do have Van Dijk and Gomez back in. And I think, you know, we have to remember that the players we've got coming back who are injured at the moment, it is going to feel like there is elements of a new team coming back because it's just so many, you know, injuries that have just taken over the team. So I think, yeah, not necessarily we don't need to bring that many new players in to give it a bit of an uplift and a fresh look. So, yeah, I don't think there'll be much movement this season.
Minamino, Mike, you know, he seems to be doing pretty well at Southampton and obviously we just had a Southampton caller on and he said he's really enjoying him and, you know, he's playing different positions, you know, which is an ideal for him, but he'll sort of learn from that. And obviously playing in a struggling team, you know, is quite tough, but I mean, you can't argue with the finishes that we've seen and you know, the goals that he scored shows us the player that we thought we were getting, really. And so he is still in there. So the hope is obviously that the Southampton move, you know, can sort of rekindle a little bit in him. And like someone said before, his love of football a little bit.
Yeah, he's got a lot of quality, Minamino. I mean, a goal against Chelsea, that's the only goal they've conceded under Tuchel, I think it is, from apart from they conceded another one. I think it was a really great goal or something. So he is doing really well. Like, I think the positional thing for him, I've mentioned it with Elliot, I think it's also a problem with Minamino because I have no idea where he plays. I think we tried to mould him to a false nine, right? And I remember he played false nine against Midtjylland at home at Anfield and he was absolutely awful. Like, he didn't do any of the back-to-goal play well. He's played on the left for us and looked okay. He's played just behind the striker and looks okay. But I don't know what his best position is. I don't know where he'd fit in our system, to be honest. So I think that's a slight concern because, yeah, if he wants to get some minutes, like, first of all, he's not getting many minutes. And second of all, where's he going to get the minutes when he does come back into the fold? I don't know. But I'm excited about the talent he offers. And I do think he needs probably a bit more time and a bit of another loan spell just because I'm not convinced that he'll get the minutes he needs next season if we do sign Mbappe, like Paul says, because I do think we'll sign Mbappe or Haaland. Like I'm driving that train, basically. Like, it's going to happen. So if Kylian does come in, I do fear that Minamino's going to get the minutes he needs. So I would give him a loan, but I also think it's important about working out where he's going to play and where he's going to get his minutes. The false nine experiment hasn't worked out. Are we going to change shape to a 4-2-3-1? Maybe he can play as one just behind the striker. I don't know, but again, it's the positional thing for me is a bit of a concern because I just don't know where he's best suited.
I mean, I take the points on the positional stuff, Paul, but it was almost a belief thing for him, really, Paul, in terms of he just seemed to walk in at the time where we were just winning everything as well, which maybe, so, you know, everyone thinks it's a nice time to join a football club. Oh, you know, it's all great, but he did seem like, I don't know, it just sort of psyched them out a little bit, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, is Southampton going to help with that? I'm not sure. Or is he just a little bit more suited to, you know, being, you know, as Nick said before, a slightly bigger fish in a slightly smaller pond?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, over the years we've seen this and not just at Liverpool, but I think it's a bit of an unknown quantity when you sign a player. You can be as good, your scouting network can be as good as you want, your analysis can be as good as you want. And even looking at someone's psychology and speaking to people who know him, but until they actually come and they put on a Liverpool shirt and they're training with Liverpool players every day and they see the expectations and demands on them, I don't think you can know until that moment whether they're going to step up or not. And we've seen plenty of that over the years, haven't we? Of, you know, people signing who we think are great and they just haven't done it. And often I've joked about this over the years, like often we destroy players. Like they never recover from that. It's like, it's incredible to watch how often people leave us and just tumble. Like you'd think, oh, well, they'll leave us and they'll go and play for someone pretty good. Maybe just not, you know, top tier, but sort of Champions League or Europa League type quality. And I do worry about that a little bit for him. Like Mike says, I'm like, where does, I haven't seen it because he arrived at the same time as Jota. When you see Jota's impact, like it's the opposite. It's like Jota did the, I'm well good enough to be here and I'm just going to hit the ground running. Literally, like dead quick, dead direct, scoring goals. And almost stylistically, there's a bit of a, well, where does Minamino fit now? And I really like him. I think he's a fantastic player. I just assumed he'd sort of maybe slowly take over Firmino's position and slip into there. But again, you go back to the height thing. Firmino's taller than him. There's a physical presence about him that Minamino never really had when he played for us. So there's all kinds of things for him to do to get into that, to get into our side. And like, all joking aside, I still expect us. I'll fight Mike over driving the Mbappe train. I've been doing it for a long time now when people were laughing at it. Because like, the Nike thing is still a big thing for me in all of this. Like, when nobody else has got any money, I promise you, Nike have still got loads of it. So,
so like, if trainees still don't do it.
Exactly.
Do you want more trainees?
They're making more though. So like, if that happens, and I think that this is an interesting twist because, and it's a bit mad, isn't it? But this, I think that a similar thing's happened to Oxlade-Chamberlain with Curtis Jones, and we've seen it with Trent. Sometimes you just get a young player who's got that attitude of, get out my way. Like, I am going to be in this team. And Harvey Elliott strikes you as one of those lads. Just the well, I'll get in ahead of Minamino. And you can imagine him training with him being like, I'll just make you look crap every day, mate. I'll make sure they think I'm better than you. And if you can't get past me, you're not getting in this team.
Yeah, he has got a swagger about him, hasn't he, Harriet? got you confused there. You've both got swag, what can I say? Are the kids still saying swag? Help me out.
Who knows?
I've come to you. Help me out. He's got that about him, though, hasn't he, Harriet, Harvey? You know, it was lovely to hear Adam talk before about, you know, he's got that good arrogance that a top footballer needs. And, you know, he stepped up, you know, to go into Blackburn and be the most creative force, and then to say, yeah, bring it on, I'll do it. And, you know, as Adam said before, outperforming all the young players in that division, you know, by a mile. And he does back himself, doesn't he? And that's going to be really important because he's going to need that, you know, if he's going to break through at Liverpool.
Yeah, it's really impressive. And like Paul said, when you have players like Curtis Jones that come through and everyone says, oh, you need to sort of reel them back in and make sure they don't get too arrogant. But, you know, when you're a young player, you kind of need that. And that's also why you have young players in your team, because they provide that level of excitement and they just do a few mad things. And I think, you know, when it's not a defender and they're not going to like get caught out and they're going to get concede a goal because of it, I kind of like to see it. I like to see the more bold moves. So, yeah, it is exciting that he is so young and that I do think he has such a bright future ahead of him at Liverpool. And yeah, I am still a bit cautious to bring him straight back in next season, because I just don't think he'll get the game time that he really needs to progress on the level that I think he really can. So I would still like to see him maybe at Liverpool, and not next season, but the season after, just to see what happens over the next year. And like you said, maybe play at a Premier League team, see how he does against other Premier League sides before we say, OK, he can come and be back up now to the front three.
I'm going to ring you after he scored two against some Swiss team in pre-season and you'll have changed your mind.
I'll change my mind.
You'll be in your fancy TV before you know it.
Yeah.
So let's have a little chat about Kabak then, because he's on loan at Liverpool. Liverpool have got an £18 million fee sort of agreed in principle if they do want to take him. What do you think is most likely to happen, Mike, and how impressed have you been with him so far?
I think we'll end up signing him just because he seems like someone who's a good lad. The fee's pretty reasonable as well. I've been impressed. So I was quite reluctant to sign him. I wasn't a fan of whenever I watched him play for Schalke. I was never impressed, but I think he deserves credit for two reasons. I think he's changed the way he plays. So he was a very front foot defender, and that's reflected in his first two performances, where he gets a few yellow cards for some kind of rash tackles. So he's a very front foot defender in the mould of like a Dejan Lovren. And what we have seen him do in the last few games, I think the Wolves game is the best example of that, is become this more assured defender who's reading the game, who's covering space, who's, you know, looking after Nat Phillips at times. And when Nat Phillips does push up and he's a bit more aggressive and he's engaging with a centre forward, he's covering for him. So you are seeing him show a lot of maturity for someone who's only 20. And we have to remember that with some of our best signings on the clock, Fabinho, Robertson, Chamberlain, they've all needed, you know, two or three months to bed in. And that's when we were flying. That's when we were probably one of the best teams in Europe. Quebec's come into a side that are absolutely lost in terms of identity. They're lost in every single sense of the word, really. You know, on our worst run of form any of us can remember. He's come into that team and he's had to become the centre-back in that team. And he's done well. He's only 20 years of age. He's come from a side that, 20th in the Bundesliga, going to get relegated. And he's improving. I was very against signing him. I just thought, why on earth are we signing this guy who's played for Schalke and he's never really impressed me, never watched him play? But he's impressed me a lot, and I think that the most important thing as well is he's a good young mature centre back. He also seems like a really good player and a good person. Sorry, and that's something that I know the club value when it comes to signing. So I'm very much on board signing Kabak for 18 million.
It is funny with Kabak, isn't it, Paul? Because he goes from Schalke, who are like getting beat every week, and probably thinks, oh, great, off to Liverpool, this is going to be brilliant. And it reminds me of that meme of the fella walking in with the pizza and everything's on fire. And like, it must have felt like that to him, do you know what I mean? He's like, oh, it's even worse. Get me back to Germany. but he's done all right, considering all that, because then he walked into a fire.
Well, I think as well, Michael Edwards has done him with the... with the Verge, as he did with everyone in negotiations when we were negotiating prices on players in January, doing everyone with the Virgil van Dijk training footage. Like, he's sound. And Kabak's like, I love him. I love Van Dijk. I can't wait to play with him. It's like, how do we break this to you, mate? You're playing with Nat Phillips. But the main reason we have to buy him is he sold his house. That's like, I love that about him. It's literally got on the plane and he was like, I'm done in Schalke. That's it. And everyone's come to him, lad, you're just on loan for 6 months. Like, this is not confirmed. He's like, don't worry about it. Sell everything in Germany. I've brought my case with me. That's it. I'm done. I'm never leaving. And if aside from anything else, I love that. Like, I love the idea that he just backs himself. I think someone said last week on a show that he's the new Dejan Lovren, and I think we'll all agree the thing that's fallen apart since last year is Lovren left.
I feel like Kabak selling his house and then getting his move to Liverpool is going to end up in one of your books, to be honest with you, as an example of, like, you know, positive thinking, making something happen. Don't even consider any alternative. And then there he is, lifting the European Cup and getting a 5-year deal.
There he is. And look, at the end of the day, we've had three performances of him with Nat Phillips and three clean sheets. So maybe the player getting sold to fund the Mbappe and Haaland deal will be Virgil after all this. He's looking on thinking, how do I get back in this side?
Yeah, I mean, it is one possibility, Harry. I will be fair and say that it is one possibility. But what do you think in terms of Kabak? Do you think they'll end up paying? I know, you know, we're a little bit early and you know, there's plenty of time and we don't have to rush the decision. But what's looking most likely to you based on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think they'll keep him on. I think if this season's taught us anything, it's that we need backup and we need players in depth and squad depth. So, yeah, I did like when he left, he sort of wrote a message like he was never going to go back. I think everyone presume that was kind of it. I don't know what he was thinking, saying a permanent goodbye, but that's what he's done. I back him. I think he'll stay. And he's, you know, he's only had a few games. I think in the first few games he looked quite shaky and he was getting caught out quite a lot and, you know, players getting in behind him, but he's just progressing with every game we've seen and he has settled in really quickly. And I think you can't underestimate that as a 20-year-old player coming into such a big side, as we've already said, that he has really settled. And I think, you know, he's got a lot to learn. I think it's a great place for him to do it under Klopp. And yeah, I hope we keep him. I'd like to see him stay.
Loads of positivity for Big Kabak at the end there, which is great. I think he'll end up coming too, but we shall see what else we do at centre-half, because I think there might be one or two outs there as well, so we might still need one more. But we shall see. But in the meantime, I hope you've enjoyed that. Thanks a lot, obviously, to all our callers before who were, you know, watching these guys every week. So it was really great to get their insights on where they're at. And obviously to Harriet, to Paul and to Mike for giving their opinions on what they think will happen next. I hope you've enjoyed that. It's a bit of a different weekend. We're going to be doing a few slightly different weekend shows over the next couple of weeks while there isn't any football. Just because we think it's interesting subjects to cover, but also to showcase a little bit of the different things that's going on behind the paywall of the Anfield Wrap. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Do subscribe if you don't. But have a lovely weekend anyway. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.